The numbers told the story, they always do.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
It is A Numbers Game here on VSiN. Happy to be with you here on a Tuesday morning. I'm Jeff Parles. Wyatt Tomchek is here as well, and now with us, we're going to just dive right in. One of my favorites here in the baseball industry, our guy Dan Zimborski. Find his work on FanGraphs and on ESPN. He also created Zips. He's a pretty smart guy. Pretty smart guy, for sure. Dan, pleasure as always. Good to talk to you this morning.
Always good to get a chance to speak with you, Jeff.
So Dan, I just want to get your quick thoughts. Home Run Derby last night. Juan Soto beats Julio Rodriguez, but more importantly, the conquering hero, Albert Pujols, actually won a round, which was probably the most... Dan, to me, like, again, the Home Run Derby, always we get some weird things. That was the most surprising result I can remember since moving to this new format for the Home Run Derby, was Pujols actually winning a round, even though, again, maybe it's some weird counting on Kyle Schwarber's amount of homers.
Yeah, apparently the counting system is adding numbers, you know, one at a time, as was a little difficult for the tracker. As a fellow 40-something to Pujols, I totally commiserated with him, because when he saw, I think he expected to lose, when he saw Schwarber tie, he had that look on his face like, oh, I have to stand up again, man.
No, it's true. It's just like, especially, well, first off, Dan, first off, it looked like Albert looked up. Looked like me after basically running a mile after the first round. It looked completely out of it. But like you said, it's like, oh, man, I have to get back up. But he did win. And then Soto took care of him in the second round. And then Soto went on to beat Julio Rodriguez, who hit the most homers of the night last night. But not enough to get the Derby championship. Dan, All-Star game tonight. Do you have any thoughts? Do you have anything in your numbers that could possibly trigger a bet for anyone? Or is this just one of those, like, you know what, it's an exhibition, I'm just taking the night off and enjoying watching all these All-Stars just play?
Really, that's the best approach to the All-Star game, because it's not played like a real game of baseball. It's played like one of those ensemble comedy movies where you have a cast of, like, 75 people who are recognizable and everybody has to kind of show up and give their one-liner and shuffle off. It's kind of a hard thing to bet, because it's just, you know, I was thinking of a word that was actually an expletive, but it's kind of a mess. To me, the All-Star game is kind of the least interesting part of All-Star week, as weird as that sounds.
Why is that? Is just because the other events are more entertaining, or actually, in all honesty, at this point, finding out who the starting pitchers are almost as entertaining?
Well, the Home Run Derby is, I mean, it's an exhibition, but it's a real fun one, and players seem even more into it than the game itself. I love the futures game. Even the celebrity softball game, I mean, it's nonsense, but it's amusing nonsense. And then we get the All-Star game, which, you know, there's no real stakes involved. Everybody just plays a little bit and it just walks off. It's just not as fun for me. And I never like betting on something I don't enjoy as much as other things.
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying on that, Dan. Before we get to the second half here, of course, we mentioned Juan Soto, of course, winning the Home Run Derby. But then the news that the Nats are willing to at least listen to offers and potentially trade Juan Soto. He's not, Dan, it is very rare that any player like this would even become available via trade. What would it take for you to get a even remotely close package to what Juan Soto is actually worth here?
You will probably have to give up a good chunk of your top prospects to the system. Like, if the Orioles acquired him, they'd probably have to give up Gunnar Henderson and Grayson Rodriguez. I don't think the Orioles are going to, but that's the kind of package you're going to have to offer the Nats. Now, it's not going to be unlimited, because, of course, the Mookie Betts for 1 year wasn't unlimited either. So if people think they're going to get an entire farm system out of it, that's probably a little unrealistic. But there are so many teams that would benefit from Soto, because he's just such an amazing hitter. Even in kind of a down season for him, his numbers are terrific.
He's just the best natural hitter in the game, basically, at this point for Soto. And look, there are only probably a handful of teams that have farm systems and the willingness to pay a guy $500 million. Really only four, I would say. The two New York teams, the Padres and the Dodgers would be the four that I think could realistically get in the mix for Soto. But again, who knows if he goes by the August 2nd trade deadline. Dan, just looking at the first half as a whole, just I'll open the floor up to you very broadly here. What team defied your preseason numbers the most so far?
Well, I think you can actually say it's the Yankees, not because I didn't project them to be good, but I didn't project them to be this dominant. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, their pace has slowed down a little, but they're 64-28 now. They're on pace to have, 110-ish wins. It's a team that has held together better than I thought. The pitching has stayed healthy, which is one of the kind of the key factors for the Yankees, because they've basically been able to start their five desired pitchers all year. They've only had three starts from other pitchers, from Clark Schmidt and J.P. Sears. And that kind of health, it was kind of a key for the Yankees, because once you start getting injuries, their quality for, starters 6 through 8 drop off considerably. So the Yankees, have been extremely impressive. And I think on the negative standpoint, I guess the Angels now are worse than I expected. For almost a month and a half, they were a lot better than I expected, but the collapse has just been so notable. Even with Trout and Ohtani having just monster seasons, you really feel like there's an ownership change that needs to happen for the Angels to get anywhere.
Something needs to happen with them because you have this era's Babe Ruth and Ohtani. Trout, who has dealt with some injuries and just went on the IL again, is having a really good year as well. An obvious all-star starter yet again for Trout, but again, hasn't mattered for the Angels. That 17-game losing streak really derailed all the good magic they had the first 6 weeks of the season. Dan Zaborski's with us. He's of FanGraphs and of ESPN as well, the creator of Zips. Dan with us right now. Dan, since you brought up the Angels, and this is a common debate on this network, AL MVP right now, Shohei Ohtani is your betting favorite at most shops. At BetMGM, he's -105. Aaron Judge is your second favorite, +150, +160 pocket on Aaron Judge. If you were voting today, who gets your vote?
It has to be Ohtani. Judge is having the better offensive season. But Ohtani's also a pitcher, and that's a hard thing to counteract because, everybody plays defense, but, the de facto defense of being a pitcher is an ERA under 2.5 in 15 starts, striking out nearly 13 guys a game. That's like the best defensive hitter in baseball history. It would be really, really hard for me to have to think of any logical excuse. Other than, blaming him for the Angels, which is hardly his fault, which is a weird way to vote for me. I don't really consider that. He would be my pick. I don't know how to say otherwise.
What are the chances you give Ohtani to win both the MVP and the Cy Young, then?
Oh, that would be fun because it's a real hard thing to do. We've had kind of those things before when pitchers get the MVP, but I'd love to see him get that and, the Silver Slugger too, and just give him all the hardware. He has to play for the Angels. He needs it.
Dan Zimborski with us right now. Dan, just NL side, NL awards real quick. Paul Goldschmidt's the betting favorite, odds on -110 in the MVP race. Sandy Alcantara, odds on right now, -105 in the Cy Young race. If it's not both of those guys in those two races, who would it be?
I think right now, if the season was over, I'd actually probably vote for Nolan Arenado.
Okay.
I think he isn't quite contributing as much offensively as Goldschmidt, but he's also a terrific defensive third baseman, and that I kind of think is a very underrated position defensively at the major league level, because if you look at it, the spread of defensive performances among third basemen is actually one of the highest of any position. That kind of suggests that it's one of those tweener positions, kind of in the middle of the defensive spectrum, isn't quite, as valued as it should be sometimes. And you kind of see that through baseball history, there's kind of a clash between the stone-handed third baseman and the glove guy. So I think Arenado would, by a hair, get my MVP. I'd probably go Arenado, Machado, Goldschmidt, then maybe Swanson. But I don't have that ballot yet, so we'll see.
Swanson, you're the first person to mention Dansby Swanson. I think I'm banging the drum for Austin Riley here, and that would almost be an emotional hedge for me because that would probably mean the Braves will have caught the Mets in that regard. Riley, who was as high as 70-1 about 3.5 weeks ago, is now 14-1 at BetMGM. Dan, all right, we got about a minute. I know it's hard to put you on the spot here on July 19th, but right now, if I made you say, all right, Dan, who's playing for it all in October, you would say...
The very boring Dodgers-Yankees, which you've seen before, but I think, I'd like it to be, Orioles-Padres. That would be fun. Don't bet that.
No, don't bet that. You and I agree. It's interesting, Dan, because there is such, for me, there's such a divide between the top five teams and everyone else. The Mets, the Braves, the Dodgers, the Astros, and the Yankees. No particular order on those five, but... Look, getting a Yankees-Dodgers World Series would make a lot of sense, and the Dodgers-Astros World Series, I think, to me, the two most logical scenarios that we are going to get at this point. But he's Dan Zimborski. Get him on the tweets at his name, at DZimborski is where you find him on Twitter. You can find his great work at FanGraphsNESPN.com as well. Dan, pleasure as always. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Always fun. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Dan Zimborski, everyone. We are going to the Great White North, Minnesota. The Vikings preview next on A Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The VSiN Summer Specials live for just $19. You get everything we do here at VSiN from now through the end of July. Sign up today. You'll get daily best bets from VSiN, including Adam Burke's MLB best bets, NFL preseason coverage, premium articles on golf, UFC, and NASCAR as well. You want the full VSiN experience? It features a daily best bets email, every edition of Point Spread Weekly, use of our betting tools, and a live video stream whenever you want it. The cost is just $19 to be a subscriber through July 31st. Sign up now, VSiN.com/summer, where you take advantage of this great offer. It's a numbers game here on VSiN. Happy to be with you. I'm Jeff Parles. He is Wyatt Tomchek. Shout out to the crew as well. Matt, Jeff, Dakota, doing fine work. Shout out to Matt Hicks as well. I buried his Bears this morning. So just an extra shout out to our technical director.
Double work, and we just said, the Bears, worst team in the NFC.
Yeah, just burying his Bears earlier in the show. Danny Burke's going to be with us next segment, so about 13 minutes time from now. 8:30 Pacific, 11:30 Eastern for Danny Burke. We'll see if he buries the Bears as well. Of course, host of Rush Hour in the Chicago CityCast here at the network. But let's go to the Vikings. Now, the Vikings are the next team. They are the highest variance team in the entire NFL for me this year because you have a new head coach in Kevin O'Connell, comes over from the Rams. Mike Zimmer was so done by the end. It's funny because Mike Zimmer's, just the way that his career path went as a head coach, I thought Mike Zimmer was a very good head coach for a good portion of his tenure in Minnesota. The game it was just one of those where the game, as soon as it passed him by, it passed him by quickly. And the last 3 years, he made the playoffs in 2019, you won a playoff game, in New Orleans before getting stomped in San Francisco. And in the last 2 years were big-time disappointments. Big-time disappointments the last 2 years. Honestly, of the 4 years with Kirk Cousins now, three of them have been massive disappointments. No playoffs in three of the four. Minnesota's win total is 8.5. Minus one is 165 on the over. Unders plus 140 at BetMGM. I'm a little surprised by this. I expected the yes to be favored and to make the playoffs market. The minus 105, there are even some even money out there. No minus 115 at BetMGM. Plus 260 to win the North, 18-1 to win the NFC Championship, 40-1 to win the Super Bowl. They're not in that level of competition just yet. But looking at their schedule, I want to hit their schedule real quick. Because they have a very early London game this year. Week 4 against New Orleans is in London. Which, by the way, how did the Saints allow the league to take away a home game from them? I know Green Bay kind of had no choice because they haven't been over to London yet. But that seems kind of silly that New Orleans was okay with losing a game that, quite frankly, if you're higher in New Orleans, that could be a very important game to a playoff spot. Minnesota's schedule, and again, the NFC North crossing with the AFC East, very good draw. Crossing with the NFC East, even better draw. They also get the extra game against the AFC, against the AFC South, which is good as well. Minnesota's schedule is funky because there are a few stretches that are kind of like the Bears' schedule where I would argue week 3 through week 6, especially with that game in London against New Orleans, they should win all 4 of those games if they are any good. You should beat Detroit and Chicago in your building. You should be able to go on the road to Miami and win that game. And a neutral site against New Orleans, I would imagine that Minnesota would probably be a small favorite in that game, with that game being in London. But we'll have to see what happens the first 3 weeks. But then you have a few other difficult stretches. The 3-week stretch from week 10 to week 12 at Buffalo, Dallas, and New England, which, by the way, New England and Minnesota being the Thursday night game on Thanksgiving is an odd choice. Very odd choice. But that's a tough 3-game stretch for them. This is the hardest team going into the season that I have to handicap. Even with that said, I am more than likely going to have a Minnesota to make the playoff ticket in my pocket by the time the season starts. Because you have a top 3 running back in Dalvin Cook, a top 6 wide receiver, maybe even higher in Justin Jefferson. You have as good of a number 2 as there is in the NFL in Adam Thielen, even though he has gone backwards a little bit. And for all the flack that Kirk Cousins has gotten throughout his career, Kirk Cousins is well above league average at this point. And for Minnesota, with a new-look offense, and this is part of the reason I'm a little more tepid on firing on Minnesota bets here, is because I don't know what we're getting at head coach. I don't know. It's really difficult to figure out what Kevin O'Connell's going to be right away. Is he going to be like Sean McVay, who immediately flipped the switch in L.A.? Or is he going to be a coach who takes a little bit of a while to find his legs? And it's a little bit of a struggle in year 1. It is really difficult. And I don't think they've done enough defensively to really consider that defense fully improved from what it's been. And Donatel's the new defensive coordinator. This is the widest variance you can get with a team. Now, there are other bettable markets out there where if you think Minnesota is going to take the quantum leap on offense because of having an offensive coordinator that's actually in the 21st century, having a head coach that is willing to do new things, actually go ahead and actually go forward instead of trying to run an archaic offense like Minnesota has the last few years. Minnesota to be the highest scoring team in the NFL would be something I would consider. Now, it might be a little bit of a stretch, but it would not shock me if Minnesota has a massive offensive season. Vikings 20-1 in that market. Probably not enough. But if you get in the category, if you can find a 25 potentially, I would look at that. And also, too, I'm not fully convinced of that defense. You could end up needing big numbers from Cousins and company. Speaking of numbers for Cousins, player props. Cousins at 4,200 yards and a half passing on the prop. 31.5 touchdown passes, 10.5 interceptions thrown. Cousins doesn't throw as many interceptions as we think. I know he has the moniker of being a big interception throw. That's not correct. Can't bet that. 4,200 yards feels about right for what Kirk Cousins is going to do in a 17-game schedule. Cousins last year, 4,221. The year before that, remember one last game, 4,265. Through 13 picks in 2020. The other years in Minnesota, he went under that 10.5, by the way. 7 last year, 6 in 2019, 10 in 2018. So he's not the huge interception thrower that he was his final 3 years in Washington, and even those numbers weren't that big. 13, 12, 11 his last 3 years in Washington. Dalvin Cook, it's just a matter of staying healthy for Dalvin Cook. 1,150.5 feels light, but I don't trust Dalvin Cook to play a full season at this point without missing a game or two. And in this era of the NFL, it is hard to get to that number, regardless of how good you are. 9.5 rushing touchdowns, that would be a consideration on the over. The defensive guys, Danielle Hunter, 11.25 sacks. I like that over. Za'Darius Smith, 10.25 sacks. I would stay off of that. Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen. Look, Justin Jefferson is a stud. 1,350, so 1,350.5 on Justin Jefferson. That is about right. That is about what I would make it. His first 2 years, he went over both of those. Went 1,400 in his rookie year, 1,616 last year. He is such a good player. I'd rather have, if you're going to bet overs, I would rather have Jefferson-related overs than Thielen-related overs. 750.5 receiving yards for Thielen, 69.5 receptions, 7.5 receiving touchdowns. Doesn't 750.5 feel a little light? Feels a little light. I'm not going to bet it because Thielen had a bunch of leg issues last year, and that is hard to get over as a wide receiver. But that feels a little light if Thielen can play 15 games even. Maybe even 16 to get over that 750. Widest variance on the board for Minnesota. It would not shock me if Minnesota underachieves and goes 7-10. Would not shock me if Minnesota wins the NFC North. But I think I'm probably not going to be able to have the discipline on this one. I'm probably going to end up taking a yes to make the playoffs on Minnesota and not mess around with a win total or anything. Because 9-8, 8-9, never know. 8-9 may get you in as a seventh wild card in the NFC. Danny Burke coming your way next. He joins us to talk NFC North here on A Numbers Game on VSiN.
A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on A Numbers Game here on VSiN. I'm Jeff Parles and for Gil Alexander. Why, Tom Check is here as well. But now with us, he hosts Rush Hour here on this network, 6 o'clock Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. From the city of Chicago, it is our guy, Danny Burke. Good morning, Danny.
Good morning, Jeff. How you doing, my man?
Good. I just want to ask you real quick, because I know you weren't too pleased. What happened to your guy, Schwarber, yesterday? What was that?
Dude, tell me that wasn't rigged. I mean, there were so many things about that were just awful. First of all, you just saw Schwarber's poor performance. And I was saying on the Chicago CityCast when I was just recording it, I was like, that would have been like me if I was out there, of course, with different dimensions on the field to where I could actually hit home runs. But then I would have tired out after like 5 of them because he just kept hitting grounders and low liners. And then his pitcher was just all over the place, taking his time, acting like it was no big deal. And then now you have the controversy of the Statcast for ESPN now counting that 20th home run, to which the way Carl Ravitch was saying it, I kind of thought the same thing, because that last one, I thought that was tying it. And whoever else was on the broadcast was like, maybe not for Pujols advancing. And then they just gave him 19. So that was all over the place. I was pretty frustrated, but I did end up getting a little piece of Soto. So made some money back. But man, that was tough to see out of Schwarbs for sure.
Yeah, the Soto, it's funny the way that the in-game matchups were priced last night. There were some really juicy opportunities where Soto going into the final against Julio Rodriguez ended up being plus 250. That's wow. Like it was almost – it was half the price with only having to win one matchup as opposed to what it was when it closed in most spots. There were a lot of interesting betting opportunities last night. Of course, Juan Soto winning the home run derby. All right, Danny, it's NFC North Day, but we got to start with the team in your city, team you cover the most, the Chicago Bears. I already said that they're going to finish last in this division. They have not built the roster properly around Justin Fields here in year two. And Danny, it's just more than anything, forget the defense for a second. Who's going to actually be the guy that Justin Fields can rely on offensively? The Bears just don't have anyone.
Well, look, I completely get that assessment by a lot of people looking at the grand scheme of things for this Bears team. But I think you have to look at it in the sense of how they're going to improve. Because last year, I mean, Allen Robinson didn't even exist on this team. And you losing him does not hurt you whatsoever. If anything, even though they're not brand name recognition type of guys, their offense is going to get better. So you have Darnell Mooney, who took a step up last year because he needed to. If he can replicate that or get even better, that's great. Then you get Velus Jones Jr. out of Tennessee in the draft. Unknown, of course, but he's got a big body frame, and he was one of the older guys coming out of the draft. So maybe he's more mature, experienced, whatever kind of positive attributions you want to have for him. You got Byron Pringle, one of the fastest guys in the National Football League. And then you just picked up N'Keal Harry, who, hey, maybe will benefit from a new scenery, right? I know he can be a red zone threat, and I know he's also dropped a lot of easy passes, but he was a first round pick and had a lot of skill and versatility. So maybe he can kind of get things going in a new setting with Chicago. So you got some of those receivers. You still have Cole Kmet, who this has to be his year. You see the potential there, but he hasn't gotten those looks on a consistent basis. That's where the new offense comes in the mind with Luke Getsy as opposed to Matt Nagy. In the backfield, you still got Khalil Herbert. You still got David Montgomery, both very, very solid running backs. Montgomery's been one. Herbert emerged into one when Montgomery was injured last season. And then you talk about the offensive line. I just think it's impossible for them to get any worse than they were last year, where Justin Fields was fighting for his survival on every other play. So they drafted in the offensive line. You know, they picked up some guys. Hopefully they can stay healthier, and that will give Justin Fields some more comfort. But the thing also, Jeff, the most important thing about it is just having competency with that coaching staff. I mean, Matt Nagy was beyond atrocious. That play calling was horrendous. It was so bad to where people look at Justin Fields and goes, man, I don't know if I can trust this guy. He's still an unknown. But if you really watched every snap out of last season, you realize how poorly he was set up. And the fact that he was able to still make some of those great throws that he had was beyond a miracle. So I honestly think their offense will take a step forward, and they don't have the worst schedule. They actually have a very favorable schedule. I'm not saying that they're not going to be the worst team in the division or that they're going to cruise over 6.5 wins and be competing for a playoff spot. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that they will be a lot more competitive. The offense will take a big step forward. I don't think they're going to be as terrible as a lot of people are perceiving them to be, because there's no way they can be set up for as much failure as they were under Matt Nagy last year.
You know, Danny, the one big concern that I'll counter what you're just saying with is we really don't know with the coaching staff. It could be one of those situations where, yeah, Matt Nagy was really not good, but they could end up with a coaching staff that is equally as bad or maybe even worse. We're talking about a guy with Luke Getsy who's never called plays before calling plays. Matt Eberflus has never been a head coach. Danny, that's my concern here is a first-year coaching staff may very well be equal or worse than what Nagy was last year.
Hey, you're not wrong, and that's a legitimate concern as well. But I think, at least personally, as a Bears fan, we only have one option to think about it, and that's that it can't get any worse. And you know where the bar has been set. So if they're equal to that or lower, then I just give up on everything. But no, you're right. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I just look at this, and I think if there is a chance for them to give us some hope, I think the schedule really pans out well for them too. I mean, look, you get the Texans at home. On the road, you're going to the Jets and the Giants. Yeah, they're, I guess, on paper better than you, but, you know, those are still two beatable teams. You get Carson Wentz at home. I don't like Carson Wentz whatsoever. Even Miami, I know Miami, again, a better team on paper, but I wouldn't want to take two over Justin Fields right now. I'll say that. And I think a decent amount of people could agree with that, not based on the weapons, but just based on pure talent. I think the ceiling's higher for Justin Fields based on skill as at this moment, because, again, we still don't know know how high Justin Fields can take it. So there are some decent spots for the Bears this year to where they can, like I said, at least be competitive, maybe cover the spread more so than just winning outright.
Nah, they look, they have 2 4-game stretches where if they somehow go 5-3 or even 6-2, if you have an under bet at 6.5, you're probably going to be in trouble. And there are winnable games in that week 3 through 6 and week 9 through 12, including the 2 games in the Meadowlands, the Lions at home, along with the Commanders and the Texans at home in those stretches for the Bears. Danny, we just talked about Minnesota in the last segment. They're the team that has that I think has the highest variance in the entire NFL, where if their first-year head coach and Kevin O'Connell underachieves and it's more of the same of what we saw the last few years in Minnesota, they can end up going under that win total, ending up under 500 yet again. Or if O'Connell is able to catch lightning in a bottle like Sean McVay did in L.A., maybe Minnesota wins the NFC North and has a chance to make a run in the postseason. What side of the coin would you lean towards? That O'Connell's more able to handle the moment, or he's unable to handle the moment?
I think I would go with the former. I like Kevin O'Connell a lot in this spot because, like you were saying with Eberflus, yeah, there's not a lot of trust that you have with these new coaching staffs that don't have that much experience. But Kevin O'Connell being offensive minded, which is different from Zimmer, inheriting a great offense, being Dalvin Cook, Mattinson, KJ Osborne's emerging as a good receiver, Thielen, Jefferson, you're kind of a tight end away, but otherwise you have an amazing offense with a serviceable quarterback in Kirk Cousins. Kevin O'Connell's really set up for success as long as he's just not a knucklehead, but that's asking a lot out of Minnesota teams, right? But I took Kevin O'Connell coach of the year at 20-1, and I took the Vikings over 8.5 wins at -130. The over 9 was -118, so I'm like, yeah, I'll lay 12 cents more to get the 8.5, because again, you look at this team with all the potential that they have, all you need is their coaching staff to also not be as bad as the last one. And being an offensive minded coach helps a ton going into Minnesota. I mean, you heard the rumors that Zimmer didn't like Kirk Cousins, and we give Kirk Cousins a lot of crap, but honestly, this guy can be great in some given situations. And with the Packers presumably taking a step back, the Lions maybe being a little bit more competitive, and we just talked about the Bears not having high expectations, this seems like it has to be the year for Minnesota. They don't have the most difficult schedule themselves either. Jeff, when I kind of categorize looking at these games, I do winnable, losable, and toss-up games. I have 2 losable games, that being week 10 at Buffalo, week 17 at Green Bay. The rest of the games to me are winnable for Minnesota or 50-50 spots. I put them at 10-7 or 11-6, very high on the Vikings this year. I feel like we say it a lot of times, but again, this has to be the year for them. So I like O'Connell coach of the year. He set up nice, and same with the Vikings to go over their win total.
Danny, we have about 40 seconds here with that. Do you still think Green Bay holds on to the division crown, or you have Minnesota with 11 wins? Is that going to be enough for Minnesota to steal the crown?
You know, Aaron Rodgers being Aaron Rodgers is always seemingly going to find a way to be at the top. But if you ask me just purely based off the price, Jeff, like -185 versus like a +250 or +275, you have to go with Minnesota there, right? I mean, you don't want to lay that much with Rodgers having to develop these new relationships. Their offensive line may take a step back. Their defense is always a question mark. So, yeah, I got to lean Minnesota because of the price.
He's Danny Burke. You can find him later on the network, 6 o'clock Eastern time, the host of Rush Hour out of the city of Chicago, the Chicago CityCast as well for Danny. Danny, always a pleasure, man. We'll catch up soon.
Absolutely, Jeff, you're the man. Take care.
Of course. Thanks to Danny Burke for being with us today. The Detroit Lions preview coming your way next here on A Numbers Game.
Gil Alexander on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks, unleashes the spirit of Las Vegas with BetMGM Rewards. Every time you make a wager at BetMGM, you can earn BetMGM Rewards points that you can redeem for online bonus credit, like free bets and risk-free tokens. Planning a trip to Vegas, you can also convert your BetMGM points into MGM Rewards points that you can use towards dining, shows, and hotel rooms at over 20 MGM Resorts properties located on the Las Vegas Strip and nationwide. BetMGM Rewards, sports betting's premier loyalty program, featuring exclusive offers, incredible experiences, and valuable perks when you wager on the BetMGM app. So sign up with BetMGM or log on today to get an even bigger piece of the action with BetMGM Rewards. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 or older to place a wager. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER and please gamble responsibly. It is a numbers game here on VSiN. Happy to be with you this morning. I'm Jeff Parles in for Gil Alexander, Wyatt Tomchek in my usual chair. We'll get to the conclusion of the NFC North here with the team that I, again, there are some teams that you just can't get over what their reputation is as a whole. And the Detroit Lions are in that category of just being a perennial loser, a team that last year won three games, 3-13-1 season, but a team that at least has, culturally speaking, has moved in the right direction. At least it seemed like it last year. Where Dan Campbell comes flying in with the biting kneecaps remark, and it's like, all right, this guy's going to be a clown. It's going to be one and done. But for winning three games, Detroit stayed in a lot of these games. But the problem is they also got blown out in a lot of games. The Philadelphia game, the Cincinnati game are the two that stand out for sure, where they were 3.5-point home underdogs in both of those games, got blown out, games were done in the first quarter. For this year, though, Detroit's win total is 6.5, which is the same as Chicago. Plus 375 to make the playoffs, minus 500 on the no. Plus 850 to win the North. That is down. That is taking money. That was 11-1, 10-1 earlier at BetMGM. It's now plus 850, I should say. 850 on Detroit. 50-1 on the NFC Championship game. Champion, 125-1 to win it all. Don't bet those. Don't bet the NFC Championship. Don't bet the Super Bowl. They're not good enough. Don't do that. So really what the betting question for Detroit is, and we talked about this a little bit earlier with Drew Dinsick, how do you evaluate Jared Goff? Because if you think Jared Goff is in a mid-tier as opposed to bottom-tier NFL starting quarterback, then Detroit going over 6.5 makes a lot of sense. Because if you look at Detroit's schedule, there are winnable games the first 5 weeks of the season. They have a very early bye. They have a week 6 bye. They open the season at home against Philadelphia. We're going to learn a lot in that game. By the way, the Eagles will take money. That's just the way it's going to go in all likelihood. They play the Commanders week 2 at home. I am very low on the Commanders, as we said yesterday. I have them finishing last in the NFC East. It's a game that if Detroit is competitive against Philadelphia and Washington loses against Jacksonville, Detroit should be favored. Week 3 at Minnesota, we talked about it 2 segments ago, the Vikings, high variance. You don't know what you're getting on a weekly basis from them. Get some weird results in that. They get Seattle week 4, we'll have the NFC West on Thursday. Very low on Seattle this year. The whole market is low, obviously. No Russell Wilson anymore. A defense that isn't good, and Pete Carroll is still there for some reason. At New England week 5, I don't think it's impossible that if things go right, Detroit could pull a big upset there. But more than likely, if you're Detroit and you're a Detroit backer of an over 6.5 or a bloated number to win the division or make the playoffs, you are going to learn very quickly what you're getting out of this team. If they start 1-4, you're not winning your bets in all likelihood. Because after that first 5-game stretch, yeah, their schedule isn't overly difficult. They get the Bears twice after the bye. They get a home game against Jacksonville. They go on the road to the Jets in Carolina, who could be, and the Giants as well, could be three of the worst teams in the league potentially yet again. But if you are going to win an over 6.5 on a win total, if you're going to win a big bloated price to make the playoffs, the Lions need to start 2-3 at a minimum in those 5 games. They have to get 2 of those first 5 wide. If they don't, you're probably looking at a longer season. And the interesting thing will be, remember, a lot of these books throw up alternate win totals during the season, the in-play season win total. If Detroit gets off to a hot start, you may be able to try to middle that. Because let's say they get off 3-2, okay? 3-1 actually. You know, 3-1 through a month. That number is going to be 7.5, maybe even 8.5 with heavy juice on the under. I would go for a 2-win middle if you can get a heavy juice under 8.5. I don't see how to get to over 500. Even with the schedule not being the strongest, this team is not quite there yet. They had a good draft. They got Jameson Williams. I'm curious to see when we see him, because that will be when the offense takes an extra step. Now, the problem with that is, of course, the easy stretch, as we said, is to open the season. They have an offensive line that I actually think is quite good. They have a defense that I'm still not all the way there on, but they are going to be better than they were a year ago. I can see why some think Detroit is a good overplay on the win total. I see that. I understand that. What I do not understand is taking a price that's sub 10-1 to win the division. I don't see that. I don't see them winning the division. I think there's just too many. The Packers are still too far in front of them. And the Vikings, again, the high variance Vikings, if the variance is right on Minnesota, Minnesota will be significantly better on Detroit. I would not bet plus 850 on the Lions. I think that's too short.
I was going to ask you, Jeff, and I noticed this last week, you know, looking at the odds. Have you ever seen somebody – Detroit has better odds to win the NFC North than the Chicago Bears, but the Bears have better odds to win the NFC and the Super Bowl. That was kind of weird. I've never seen that before.
You know what? That can happen. That can happen. And again, we're talking about two teams that aren't going to win the NFC. Like, they're not winning. They're not getting to the Super Bowl either, these teams. But that can happen. I mean, the Bears, remember, started shorter than the Lions in the division market, and the Lions have been bet. People are not running to the window to bet the Lions to win the NFC title. They're going to the window to bet the division. So that's it more than anything. The Dan Campbell as coach of the year is interesting. Drew Dinsick mentioned it earlier in the show. He got 20-1. The market's now about 14-1 on Campbell. The Lions make the playoffs. It's going to be very hard for anyone else to win that award. So if you think the Lions can make the playoffs, and heck, maybe even 8-9 missing the playoffs with a loss late in the year could do it. Campbell to be coach of the year, I don't have a problem with that bet. If you're looking at props for Detroit, the flip side of all this, remember, is that if Jared Goff stinks, there isn't anyone behind him to bring in to start. They're not going to bench Jared Goff for Tim Boyle or David Blau. It's not going to happen. This sets up Detroit to pick up quarterback high next year. But if you look at the Detroit props here for the player props, Jared Goff, 3,850.5 passing yards. Feels maybe a tick high, but if Detroit is trailing in games, he'll have an opportunity. Goff went way under that last year. Remember, he missed a few games due to injury, though. He had the thumb injury. 3,245 for Goff last year. Touchdowns, 23.5. He had 19 with a few games missed last year. Keep in mind, Goff's only gone over that number twice in his career in L.A. So maybe an under there. 11.5 interceptions, that seems right. I wouldn't bother with that. The other prop ones are hard to bet. DeAndre Swift, I'm not exactly sure what we're going to get out of him this year. He's clearly the number one running back, even with Jamal Williams there. I don't want anything to do with Swift props. I don't want anything to do with Amon-Ra St. Brown props as well. Aiden Hutchinson, 7.25 sacks is interesting. Because to me, the defensive rookie of the year race, I want a guy who's going to rush the passer. I don't want a secondary guy. Even though it was very realistic that Sauce Gardner and Derek Stingley Jr. could end up being better defensive players than Hutchinson and Thibodeau, the two defensive linemen that are at the top of the board right now, it could be very hard for those guys to win.
I agree on that one.
Yeah, just really hard to win.
Why Micah Parsons was able to win last year was his pass rush ability.
It's just easier to win that award as a pass rusher. We'll get to the AFC West next week. There is one player that has been mentioned by others that could be worth a look down the board as a pass rusher. But Aiden Hutchinson over 7.25 sacks, I do like that over. I do like that over because I think it's going to be him and Thibodeau 1-2 in some order in the defensive rookie of the year race. And if he's in a race, Hutchinson, he's going to have to go over 7.25. So that's the one I like the best of the player props. Division finish. Packers 1, Minnesota 2, Detroit 3. and the Bears last. That's all the time we have on the Numbers Game here. Lombardi Line's next here on VSiN.